Good morning, everyone. This remote meeting of the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee is called to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swazinski.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bowe.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen is present. Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lippertz.
Present.
Representative Lislegard.
Present.
Representative Mecklens.
Present.
Representative Munson. Representative Munson.
He's giving a thumbs up.
Yep, I see him. He's here. Representative Stevenson.
Present.
A quorum is present. Members, we have three bills on our agenda today. And the first is House File 239, which is Representative Stevenson's bill. Representative Stevenson, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would move, is it 293? I should know. 239. I would move House File 239 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Stevenson moves that House File 239 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And I believe you have a delete all authors amendment and then an amendment to that amendment to get the bill in its shape you'd like. So maybe we'll start with the DE.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the DE amendment, which gets the bill in the shape I'd like the committee to consider it for the most part.
Representative Stevenson moves DE1 to get the bill almost in the shape he'd like. Any discussion to the DE1? Oh, well, actually, let's take the amendment first. So he moves the DE1, and then you have an A5 amendment to the DE1. Would you like to move the A5?
I would move the A5, which gets the bill in the rest of the way to the shape that I would like the committee to consider it in.
Representative Stevenson moves the A5 to the DE1 to get the bill completely in the shape he would like. Any discussion to the A5? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And all opposed? The A5 is adopted. And then we are to the underlying DE1. Any discussion to the DE1? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? The DE1 as amended is adopted. Representative Stevenson, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. You know, last night we had a very important hearing on some legislative responses to the events that occurred in the natural gas markets last month. I hope it is very clear to all the members of this committee that we need to make some changes to our natural gas systems. For different members of this committee, the reason for interest in change is probably different. You might be motivated to see decarbonization, or you might be motivated to see a more reliable local source of energy, or you might be motivated to see more energy efficient system. But I hope we can all agree that some change is necessary. The bill that I'm bringing to the committee today is an effort to facilitate changes on all of those metrics. It empowers our gas utilities under the careful supervision of the PUC to innovate, to pursue pilot projects that will decrease Minnesota consumers' reliance on carbon-based fuel source that we cannot produce in Minnesota, and instead turning towards local and decarbonized sources of energy, as well as energy conservation. From a climate perspective, the bill is really important. As we heard early in session, about a third of Minnesota's carbon emissions come from electric utilities, about a third from transportation. By contrast, my sense is that about 80% of the policy we talk about in the climate space here relates to electric utilities and maybe 15% to transportation. But there's very little conversation about the rest of our carbon emissions. I think other testifiers will talk about how significant the residential, commercial, industrial natural gas use in Minnesota is to our carbon footprint. And this bill is an important step forward in addressing that issue. But the bill will also benefit Minnesotans economically. I have no doubt that had the pilots authorized in this bill been operational during the natural gas spike, the natural gas price spike last month, they would have paid for themselves in just a couple days, if not just a couple hours, by decreasing the need to purchase additional natural gas from out-of-state markets that jumped 1,000% or more. I also want to stress that this bill, like the other bills that I have brought before this committee, is a bill that is a product of significant discussions between groups that don't always get along. CenterPoint Energy, the state's largest natural gas utility, deserves great credit for their work on this proposal and for their willingness to be leaders in rethinking this portion of the energy, or this energy sector. But great credit also goes to several environmental, business, and labor groups that were willing to step out of their comfort zones and have a conversation. I also want to once again thank the wonderful Bob Eliff for once again going above and beyond the call of duty and helping us to get this bill in a shape that the committee could consider it appropriately. Last, I want to thank, I want to note that the bill has bipartisan support. I'm pleased to partner with Senator Weber in the Senate on the bill. A similar bill passed the Senate 67-0 last year, and I'm hopeful that we will have strong support this year as well. And with that, Mr. Chair, I believe we have several testifiers.
We do. Our first testifier, I believe, is Erica Larson with CenterPoint. Ms. Larson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Let me get my... I have a PowerPoint. I'll see if I can figure out how to get it up. Are you all seeing that as you should be?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. How does that look to you? Great. Thank you to Chair Long and the committee for hearing this bill, and thank you to Representative Stevenson for authoring this legislation. My name is Erica Larson, and I am in the Regulatory Affairs Group at CenterPoint Energy. Amber Lee is also here from CenterPoint and available for questions. CenterPoint is excited about the possibilities that the Natural Gas Innovation Act would open up. It will allow us to begin to meet our customers' energy needs in new ways that will bring environmental and economic benefits to Minnesota. As a distribution company, CenterPoint does not earn a profit on the gas that we provide to our customers. Instead, we are in the transportation business. Like FedEx or UPS transport packages to customers, we transport fuel. Right now, we are transporting a lot of geologic natural gas for our customers, but we would rather be connecting them with low and no carbon resources that can meet their energy needs. Trying to figure out how to advance the slide. There we go. As this slide shows, natural gas is currently a very important source of energy for Minnesota. In extremely cold weather, CenterPoint alone supplies more power than the entirety of Minnesota's electric grid in the form of gas distribution to Minnesota homes and businesses. As Minnesota transitions to clean energy, we need to be mindful of the importance of natural gas to our current energy system and the customers who rely on natural gas for their energy needs. Because natural gas is currently so important, it is necessary that the changes to our system are made thoughtfully and with caution. This bill creates a robust process by which the Commission and interested stakeholders can evaluate natural gas utilities' decarbonization proposals. Submitting an innovation plan is optional for gas utilities. The legislation sets forth a comprehensive list of criteria that the Commission must consider when reviewing and approving innovation plans. In particular, and in response to extensive stakeholder discussions, the bill emphasizes local job and environmental benefits. The cost of innovation plans are capped, and the legislation allows utilities to increase the size of plans only as the cost effectiveness of resources is established. One of the innovative resources that CenterPoint is interested in bringing to our customers is renewable natural gas, or RNG, which will allow us to reuse the waste produced in Minnesota to generate renewable gas that can be used interchangeably with the geologic gas currently on our system. One of the best things about RNG is that there are a great variety of waste streams that can be used to create it. For instance, we are looking into models that use carbon sequestering grasses as feedstocks for digesters and models that aggregate feedstocks from smaller farms and dairies. RNG can be sourced from wastewater and organics recycling facilities in urban areas as well. Another innovative resource that CenterPoint is pursuing is renewable hydrogen. We are currently building our first hydrogen project in Minneapolis that will go on live this fall and allow us to blend carbon-free hydrogen into our supply system. This legislation would allow us to pilot hydrogen at the larger scales needed to really move the needle on the delivery of energy. House File 239 would allow CenterPoint to begin to pilot new and emerging technologies to help the state's transition to clean energy. We thank Representative Stevenson for his leadership, and we thank all of the stakeholders and interested parties who have engaged in discussions to improve the bill and put forth a bold proposal to begin the difficult work of decarbonizing our state's natural gas system. Thank you. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you so much.
And I will figure out how to stop sharing. There we go.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Next, we will be hearing from Kevin Prantis with LIUNA. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Prantis.
Thank you very much, Chair Long, Representative Stevenson, and committee members. My name is Kevin Prantis, and I'm here to testify today on behalf of 28,000 LIUNA members and family members who live in Minnesota and North Dakota, overwhelmingly construction laborers and their families. We believe that the Natural Gas Innovation Act is good energy policy, but it's also good news for the men and women who make their living building and maintaining energy systems, including not only our members, but also the pipe trades and many others. And finally, it's good for our state's economy, not only taking an important step toward achieving reductions in carbon emissions without sacrificing affordability and reliability, but also creating the potential to grow Minnesota's clean energy economy, particularly in rural Minnesota. As Eric explained, the bill would give the Public Utilities Commission authority to approve innovative pilot programs to reduce our carbon footprint using technologies like methane capture from agriculture and solid waste disposal and generating green hydrogen from excess wind power. LIUNA has more than 1,000 members who make their living installing and maintaining gas distribution lines and the main lines that supply them. Our members want a chance to be part of the solution to climate change by implementing technologies that reduce greenhouse gas emissions. We've worked closely with the Minnesota Pipe Trades in support of this legislation, and their members who are plumbers and pipe fitters want those same opportunities. 20 years ago, wind and solar generation were not economically competitive, but they were given support and a chance to thrive, and now they're cheaper than conventional sources like thermal coal. We need to take opportunities to deploy technologies like biogas and hydrogen to figure out what it would take to go to scale and where those technologies can be most useful. Those technologies are not cost-effective today, but that's the whole point of this legislation, is to figure out how they can be cost-effective. And as Chair Stevenson pointed out, if we look at the total possible cost of this bill, assuming that the pilots were approved by the commission and shown to be cost-effective, that total cost, you know, would easily have paid for itself had we had these programs in place during the price spike. And we know that these events, like the event that happened in Texas, will only become more frequent. We certainly need our own, you know, homegrown supply, whether that supply is in the form of strategic electrification or whether that comes in the form of hydrogen or renewable natural gas. The bill's not a blank check. It includes strong consumer environmental protections and subjects all the pilot programs and investments to the oversight and ultimately the approval of Minnesota's Independent Public Utilities Commission. The bill is supported by a broad coalition from labor, environmental organizations, Conservation Minnesota, Center for Energy and Environment. You'll hear from Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, Hispanics and Energy. We think it's a great bill, a great opportunity for our members to get to participate in solutions to climate change, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Prantis. And finally, for Representative Stevenson's testifiers, we'll hear from Mike Bull with Center for Energy and the Environment. Mr. Bull.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Bull. I'm the policy director for the Center for Energy and Environment. We're a 40-year-old Minnesota-based clean energy nonprofit, and I'm here to testify strongly in favor of House File 239, the Natural Gas Innovation Act. We've appreciated Representative Stevenson's and CenterPoint's willingness to work with us, Fresh Energy, LIUNA, and a host of others on this bill. I especially want to point out the work that Jessica Burdett of the Minnesota Department of Commerce has done to manage the cost of this bill for utility ratepayers. We also appreciate the inclusion of additional energy efficiency and strategic electrification in the list of alternative resources to be considered in an innovation plan. In addition to being an effective strategy to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from CenterPoint service to its customers without a reduction in customer comfort, energy efficiency can help bring down the overall cost of an innovation plan. And it's noteworthy that Minnesota's largest natural gas utility is willing to explore electrification as a strategy to reduce the carbon intensity of its service. The practical experience we learn from innovation plans under this legislation will help us evaluate the most practical and cost-effective alternatives for reducing greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota buildings and industry in a measured and equitable way that protects ratepayers and provides benefits on a diverse set of issues, including agricultural, environmental, and worker issues. As I testified to the committee last night, greenhouse gas emissions from natural gas end uses in Minnesota are increasing significantly. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency recently found that while Minnesota has made great progress in reducing power sector emissions and much more moderate progress in the transportation and ag sectors, staying relatively flat, greenhouse gas emissions from the commercial sector has increased 15% and a whopping 32% from the residential sector. These emissions are primarily due to the combustion of natural gas in buildings. An analysis we published in December of last year goes a step further. Minnesota stays on its current trajectory. Greenhouse gas emissions from natural gas end uses alone will surpass Minnesota's entire economy-wide 2050 greenhouse gas emissions targets by the year 2030. Emissions from every other sector would need to be reduced to zero if Minnesota were to meet its current statutory greenhouse gas goals, let alone the updated, more stringent goals in Vice Chair Akam's House File 1428, which we also support. So we urgently need to get started getting our arms around how to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from natural gas service, and we think the Natural Gas Innovation Act is a great step toward doing just that. We thank Representative Stevenson and CenterPoint for their leadership on the bill and urge you to vote yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Bull. We have three folks who have signed up for public testimony. And first, we will hear from Jessica Trisht with the Sierra Club. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Trisht.
Hi, thank you, Chair Long and committee members, for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Jessica Trisht. I'm speaking on behalf of the Sierra Club. We represent 80,000 members and supporters across Minnesota empowered to protect our community's well-being through environmental advocacy. Sierra Club does not support House File 239. We appreciate the work of Representative Stevenson and stakeholders and CenterPoint in updating this bill to require stronger accounting of emissions reductions and include more technologies, but overall the approach is not what the climate crisis demands. To address the climate crisis, we need a comprehensive plan to decarbonize the fossil gas system that fuels our homes, businesses, and industry, as folks have talked about already. A comprehensive plan would have clear greenhouse gas reduction goals of 100% decarbonization by 2050 and reductions of 45% by 2030, as the IPCC says is necessary. The focus on pilot projects and individual technologies and innovative resource plans without a utility-wide decarbonization plan with goals and measurable outcomes means that we're not ensuring limited ratepayer dollars are used for the most strategic solutions for the climate and customers. We may be missing out on opportunities to scale up existing cost-effective emissions-reducing technologies now, and we're not requiring the gas sector to do its part in meeting our climate goals. The plan says that innovative resource plans will contribute to meeting the state's greenhouse gas reduction goals and track that progress, but without measurable goals, the end result could be less than we need. We do support the proposal in this bill to open a Public Utilities Commission proceeding to explore what is needed to support gas utilities in meeting net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. We think that would be a helpful step in developing a utility-wide plan. The current bill also has a preference for renewable natural gas and other gas fuels over electrification and conservation. While we hope the budget requirements for gas fuels are taken out as proposed in the A6 amendment, we know that CenterPoint is very interested in RNG development from its proposals to the PUC. And while Sierra Club sees a place for environmentally beneficial RNG in decarbonizing our gas system, it has limitations that make it more appropriate for hard to decarbonize sectors like large industry. Those limitations include expense, costs range from 4 to 17 times more expensive than fossil gas, and it's limited in supply. According to a study by the NRDC, even after ramping up production, RNG could only replace between 3 and 7% of total fossil gas demand. RNG won't be able to replace gas in our homes, buildings, power plants, and industry. There are other air and water pollution impacts from potential sources of RNG that are also not accounted for in this bill. So we very much appreciate the start of the conversation about decarbonization of our gas system, and we recognize the importance of innovation to getting to full decarbonization, but the potential role for innovative technology must be considered in a larger context of decarbonization. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Trisht. Next, we'll hear from Carolyn Berninger with MCEA. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Long and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Carolyn Berninger, and I am a climate policy analyst at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, or MCEA. MCEA is a nonprofit organization with 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment and the health of its people. We appreciate the purpose behind this bill to begin reducing greenhouse gas emissions from Minnesota's gas utilities, and we appreciate the work of Representative Stevenson, CenterPoint Energy, and the number of other stakeholders on this bill. As you've already heard, with carbon emissions increasing in Minnesota's building and industrial sectors since 2005, it's critically important to find ways to decarbonize these sectors and begin to meet Minnesota's climate targets. We support several pieces of this bill that would generate real climate and health benefits for Minnesota, and we oppose the provisions that would prioritize renewable natural gas over other innovative solutions. So first, we support the opportunity for gas utilities to file innovative resource plans, the required pilot programs, and the additional reporting requirements across the utilities system. Together, these plans and reporting requirements will provide necessary context within which the commission and the public can evaluate utilities' decarbonization efforts. And the pilot programs will provide important insight into technologies that have the potential to decarbonize Minnesota's building sector at scale. To strengthen utilities' planning requirements, we feel the bill could also require utilities to demonstrate through these planning efforts how they plan to meet Minnesota's greenhouse gas reduction goals. We also support the direction to the Public Utilities Commission to open an investigatory docket into the future of natural gas utilities in Minnesota. This kind of high-level planning is necessary to examine the continued role of Minnesota's gas utilities in the coming years, and to achieve the kind of emissions reductions we need across the economy. As I've already said, what we don't support in this bill is the prioritization of renewable natural gas and other gaseous fuels over other potential decarbonization solutions. We feel this sends the wrong signal and focuses ratepayer funds on the wrong technologies. Instead, we need a technology-neutral approach that prioritizes the technologies that are going to have the most climate benefits. While renewable natural gas may have some role to play in a decarbonized future, its limited availability, high cost, and highly variable climate impacts limit its potential as a direct replacement for burning fossil gas in homes. Other technologies, including strategic electrification and district heating, may have better potential to decarbonize the building sector at scale, and we need to compare all of these technologies equally. Thus, we would support adopting the A6 amendment to improve this bill's climate outcomes. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and we look forward to this continued conversation.
Thank you, Ms. Berninger. And our final public testifier is Dr. Margaret Cherney-Hendrick with Fresh Energy. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Cherney-Hendrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Good morning. My name is Margaret Cherney-Hendrick, and I'm here on behalf of Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a nearly 30-year-old Minnesota-based nonpartisan nonprofit organization working to achieve equitable carbon-neutral economies. We appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today regarding House File 239. As we've already heard, Minnesota has made great progress in reducing our greenhouse gas emissions from the power sector, but we have fallen behind in making similar progress in other critical sectors of the economy, like buildings and industry. There is a particular urgency to cleaning up emissions from both of these sectors, as emissions have risen 24% and 18% from buildings and industry, respectively, since 2005. While eliminating carbon pollution from Minnesota's economy is a public policy priority that is here to stay, we also recognize that Minnesota's gas utilities face unique challenges with eliminating carbon from their systems, which serve both of these key sectors. House File 239 represents an important first step in decarbonizing end uses now served by natural gas across utility service territories in Minnesota. We would also like to note that we appreciate the many collaborative meetings that Fresh Energy has had with the team at CenterPoint, as the bill has evolved from its companion in the Senate, Senate File 421. House File 239 includes several elements that Fresh Energy supports. We support the requirement for the PUC to open a docket to explore the policy and regulatory changes needed to align gas utility investments and planning with the state and IPCC greenhouse gas reduction goals. This docket creates a venue to holistically evaluate utility decarbonization strategies, including but not limited to those introduced in House File 239. We are also supportive of expanded gas utility reporting requirements that lend greater insight into infrastructure and fuel investments across the utility more broadly. We believe it is critical to evaluate innovative plans in the context of the utility's other planned investments and activities with respect to natural gas. This evaluation approach will ensure that investments in innovative plans are targeted to achieve the greatest customer and greenhouse gas reduction value, while also ensuring that innovation plans are not undermined by unwarranted investments in and or expansion of the infrastructure that supports natural gas. Finally, we are supportive of the inclusion of electrification, district energy, and energy efficiency strategies in pilot programs. We believe that deployment of these carbon-free innovative solutions will play a fundamental role in reducing emissions for both the buildings and industrial sectors. However, we do have several concerns with the bill, as it is currently written, that require us to take a neutral rather than supportive stance today. First, we are opposed to the provision that specifies that 50% or more of ratepayer money recovered needs to be used specifically for the procurement and distribution of renewable natural gas, biogas, hydrogen, or ammonia. To maximize the potential to reduce greenhouse gas emissions across the utility service territory, we believe that House File 239 should not confer special preference for any one fuel or technology and should allow the utility flexibility to make prudent investments in line with climate and ratepayer interests. Second, we are opposed to the provision that specifies that the cost effectiveness of alternative gaseous fuels must be compared to carbon-free solutions like electrification, district energy, and energy efficiency. This framework falsely pits fuels versus non-fuel solutions against each other when, in reality, the utility will be most successful in advancing innovative solutions in tandem without restrictions. Again, Fresh Energy appreciates the constructive dialogue we've had with CenterPoint and other stakeholders, and we appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today about House File 239. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Attorney Hendrick. That concludes our public testifiers, and so we will now turn to member questions, and we'll begin with Representative Akin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson, for bringing this bill forward. It's clear both in the content of the bill and in the testimony that there's been a lot of work that has gone into to putting this together, and I'm grateful for all of that. I have a question for Ms. Larson with CenterPoint, if she'd be willing to answer. I'm interested. One of the things I'm concerned about is as a member that is deeply concerned with the climate crisis, and as Mr. Bull pointed out, authoring a bill that is hoping to get us on a carbon-free or net zero carbon level by 2050. And so in looking at CenterPoint's kind of long-term decarbonization plans, I'm wondering if you can share with me at all that your plans for, if there are goals or plans or a commitment that CenterPoint has for decarbonization.
Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Chair Long, Representative Acomb. Yes, so CenterPoint does have a corporate carbon goal, and we are a little bit unique, a little bit ahead of the curve in that we have a goal for reducing customer usage of natural gas, and we're shooting for a 20 to 30% reduction in emissions from customer natural gas use. I want to say by 2035, but don't quote me. I'll have to check on that, and I'll let you know if I'm wrong. So we are a little bit ahead in having that goal. We talked a lot in putting this together about creating goals and putting them in the piece of legislation. I think that the problem, one of the issues that we're having, is that we are quite far behind on thinking this through in the state. So setting any sort of mid-range targets for the state on natural gas reductions, we don't know what technologies will take off and how quickly they're going to be able to move. I do think that we're at an excellent turning point right now in terms of the engineering and the science and the market developments, where things really are starting to move much more quickly than we've seen. So I'm hopeful that we're really going to be able to start making some good progress in the next 5-10 years, and then have a better idea of how quickly we can move into the future to get to the Minnesota climate goals and the places where we need to be in terms of climate change.
Representative Akin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I appreciate that, and I think that reductions are great. And I think as we look back at the Next Generation Energy Act of 2007, we made long-term commitments that were at that time aspirational. And so your point about recognizing that change is coming, is important, and I value that, and so thank you. I think it's also important to make aspirational goals that we're working toward. And so do you have any aspirational goals about reaching net zero or carbon free in the future?
Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Chair Long, Representative Acomb. As a company, we have not announced a carbon zero goal by any date. We have tried to set our natural gas goal to be sooner. So sort of, you know, we're not saying 20 to 30% by 2050. We're saying 20 to 30% sooner. And then, you know, hopefully we can make progress from there. The bill does include a goal to reduce how much fossil gas we're delivering, which I see as really necessary to achieve the state's climate goals. So, you know, we've heard from Mike Bull in particular about the how we are increasing how much emissions come from buildings and industry. We are increasing because we are adding population, essentially. As our economy grows, as we add homes, we are adding more gas that we are delivering, and that is just a linear relationship between emissions and gas delivery. SIP is fantastic and has, I think, helped. Even, you know, we haven't gone up as much as we would have otherwise because of SIP, but I think it's going to be absolutely necessary to actually start trending down. So that is, I would say, one goal that is in this bill.
Representative Bacon.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. It was talked about earlier. I think it might have been the folks from CenterPoint, but they were mentioned that during the polar vortex that they delivered as much energy by themselves as the rest of the grid was delivering actual energy. And if we were to reach that 100% carbon neutral generation in the state, how much, I mean, if we were to eliminate gas as a heat source within homes, which is obviously the goal for some in the state, how much more generation will we have to add to actually replace it from a BTU to electrification model? Has that number been done? Maybe that'd be a question for Elof or someone else.
Well, let me see if any of the testifiers would like to take that first. Mr. Bull, Dr. Cherney-Henrich. Mr. Bull.
Mr. Chair, I've heard the figure of, you know, 2 to 3 times peak demand generation in order to replace the natural gas BTU needed on a very cold day. I guess you can quote me on it because I said it, but it's a figure that I've heard, but I'm not entirely sure of it.
Dr. Cherney-Henrich.
I think, you know, with load forecasts into the future, there are also, I think, a lot of assumptions that we should take into consideration as well. You know, Mike mentioned energy efficiency, especially in the building sector. This is just hypercritical that we are, especially in existing buildings, really doubling and tripling down on energy efficiency specifically to limit that load growth and do that strategically and sustainably. And then, you know, with new construction, everything has to, you know, be built to higher standards, better standards. So there are some real steps that we can take, which I am appreciative that this bill also is going to be piloting, you know, cold climate air source heat pumps coupled with deep energy retrofits. So we can start to learn specifically about how to limit that load growth over time.
Representative Swazinski.
That's all. Thank you.
Any further member questions to the bill? I don't see any, so we'll proceed to amendments. And the first amendment is mine. It is the A4. And so I will move my amendment. And my amendment would require a report to the legislature to try to help inform us of the learning that we will be seeing from these pilot projects on overall greenhouse gas emissions and the social impacts of those emissions compared to the usage of natural gas in the system. And I think since this is structured as a pilot program bill, it would be helpful for us to be able to have as a legislature some information that we can take back and reflect on as we're assessing which of these pilots is being more successful. So that is the amendment. Discussion to the amendment. Representative Stevenson.
Well, I haven't been in the legislature that long, but I know it's a bad idea to oppose an amendment offered by the chair. I actually think this is a good amendment, and I'm pleased to support it.
I appreciate Representative Stevenson's reluctant support of my amendment. So any further discussion to the A4? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The A4 is adopted. And next we have the A6 amendment, which I believe is Representative Lee's amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A6 amendment.
Representative Lee moves the A6 amendment. Would you care to describe your amendment, Representative Lee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the A6 amendment addressed some of the concerns that we have heard from the public testimony, deleting lines 6.7 to 6.11 and 6.18 to 6.20 to ensure that the framework created by Chair Stevenson's bill is fair and balanced and will allow regulators and utility reasonable discretion to find the outcome that best serve utility ratepayers and help the state meet our greenhouse gas reduction goals.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Discussion to the amendment. Representative Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Representative Lee, for this amendment. It is, I will say, a bit of a harder one to do this. As I mentioned, this bill has been really heavily negotiated between the all the different groups, the business groups, the environmental groups, the labor groups. But I did hear, and I know that the language that that Representative Lee is proposing to eliminate is important to several stakeholders. But I did hear a lot of testimony about the provisions of the A6 deletes and how it was important to several groups that it be removed. I wonder, Mr. Chair, if I could pose a question to Dr. Cherney Hendrick and ask if adoption of the A6 would change her organization's view of the bill. I recall her saying that fresh energy was neutral to the bill as it presently sits.
Fair question. Dr. Cherney Hendrick.
Yes, thanks, Representative, for the question. And, you know, recognizing that we have a couple more amendments to step through, but specific to A6, if that were adopted and that language were removed, then we would be able to shift our position to being supportive today. Thank you.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Dr. Cherney Hendrick. I would ask the chair if we could ask the same question of NCEA.
Ms. Berninger.
Yes, thank you, Representative Stevenson. Yes, if this amendment goes through and all else kind of staying the same, this would get us to a supportive position in the technology neutral language that we feel we need.
Thank you, Ms. Berninger. Representative Stevenson.
Well, Mr. Chair, in light of the fact that adoption of this amendment would gain the support of multiple additional stakeholders, I think I will encourage a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Representative Lee for bringing this forward. I had concerns about the same issues that were raised by Fresh Energy at MCEA and Representative Lee. And so I appreciate the amendment, and I'll be supporting it.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Franzen.
Roll call, please.
Representative Franzen requests a roll call. A roll call will be conducted. I don't see further discussion, and so the clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Akam.
Aye.
Minority Leader Swazinski.
No.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Bowe.
No.
Representative Christensen.
Aye.
Representative Franzen.
No.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Igo?
I don't know.
Representative Lee?
Lee, aye.
Representative Liberts?
Aye.
Representative Lizegard?
Aye.
Representative Mecklins?
Mecklin, no.
Representative Munson?
No.
Representative Stevenson?
Aye.
There being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the A6 amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A1 amendment. Representative Swazinski, is that your amendment?
No, Mr. Chair. I believe that's Representative Franzen's, I think.
Oh, okay. My apologies. Representative Franzen, would you care to move the A1?
Yes, thank you. So, members, I am afraid that the Section 4 here
is simply a backdoor to eliminate natural gas in the future. A simple Google search of banning natural gas to save the environment will bring you up wonderful headlines such as climate change solutions, more cities banning natural gas, NPR, give up your gas stove to save the planet, CBS News, cities are banning natural gas in new homes. Members, we cannot be putting any language in that could possibly be a backdoor to banning natural gas. Natural gas is cheap, most of the time cheap, and reliable, and especially in greater Minnesota, we rely on natural energy or natural gas to keep us warm. So, members, I would request a yes vote on this amendment, and I would like a roll call.
Representative Franzen moves the A1 and requests a roll call. Discussion of the amendment. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I would ask for a no vote on this amendment. I disagree wholeheartedly with Representative Franzen's characterization of this section of the bill. I don't think it at all is a backdoor to banning natural gas. I think it's an important conversation about the future of a huge segment of our energy supply in Minnesota. You know, what we saw happen in Texas in the collapse of their grid down there, the story there was a failure to plan and a failure to look at what could happen and what should happen down the road. We had a reliable grid here in Minnesota because we looked at the future and looked at what we needed to do in order to make sure we had a reliable grid. Planning is a good thing. Thinking about the future is a good thing. Having these conversations is a good thing. We don't want to be in the same position Texas was in. I would ask for a no vote on the amendment.
Further discussion of the A1. Seeing none and a roll call being requested, the clerk will take the roll and the chair votes no.
Vice Chair Akam.
No.
Minority Lead Swazinski.
Yep.
Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative Bo.
Aye.
Representative Christensen.
No.
Representative Franzen.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Igo.
Igo, aye.
Representative Lee.
Lee, no.
Representative Lippertz.
No.
Representative Lislegard.
No.
Representative Meckland.
Aye.
Representative Munson.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
No.
There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the A1 amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A2 amendment. Is that Representative Meckland's?
How did you know to share along?
Lucky guess.
I can imagine. So and in listening to this good conversation we're having here, it sounds like, you know, we're trying to find renewable ways for natural gas. But I'm hoping that you'll accept this as a favorable amendment in light of how can we get renewable and natural gas if we're going to start banning it from new construction? Seems like this would be a great opportunity to ensure that this new renewable natural gas still has a distribution system, and I would imagine that like LIUNA would want to continue to lay pipes and grounds as we grow our new communities. And I hope you consider this a favorable amendment.
Discussion to the A2, Representative Stevenson.
Well, I certainly appreciate Representative Meckland's dogged determination on this issue. And I was so happy to hear last night that he had taken my advice to heart on this provision and introduced it as a standalone bill. And I encourage him to continue to pursue his standalone bill. But I think this is not really in the spirit of the bill that we have here, and also I think would necessitate at least one additional committee stop with deadline around the corner, I would ask members to vote no.
Any further discussion of the A2? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment say aye.
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 All opposed? No.
No.
The noes have it, the A2 is not adopted. And we have the A3 amendment. Is there somebody to
yes. offer the A3? Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Representative Swazinski. I would move the A3 amendment before the committee.
Representative Swazinski moves the A3. Representative Swazinski, to your amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we spoke about this last night. I've heard from a couple of my colleagues that they've been visiting with some potential impacts from very small privately owned natural gas utilities. We know there's a few around the state, and obviously because of the price spike in the general market and the bidding for that energy. We did see that large spike during the polar vortex. And this is just to continue that conversation. We spoke about a little bit last night and the possibility of including it. So just wanted to bring it before the committee just to remind folks, and then also Chair Long, that we should probably have a conversation about this and the possibility of expanding your bill from last night in this particular area. And I just wanted to bring it up, and I will withdraw the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Swazinski. I appreciate you raising it. I had a good conversation with Representative Baker this morning as well on this issue, and look forward to continuing to engage with you and Representative Baker on this issue. Hopefully we can touch base before the week is out. Thank you for withdrawing the amendment. I don't believe we have further amendments. Representative Stevenson, closing remarks to your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've had a really good, productive conversation in committee today. I think this was a phenomenal hearing, an important discussion. I think we moved a good step forward. I'm really pleased that the bill is advancing and that we're having a good conversation, and I'd ask for members' support. And I would renew my motion that House File 239, as amended, be recommended be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Stevenson renews his motion that House File 239, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Akam.
No.
Minority Leader Swazinski.
No.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Bowe.
No.
Representative Christensen.
Aye.
Representative Franson.
No.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Igo.
No.
Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Representative Lippert.
Aye.
Representative Lislegard.
Aye.
Representative Mecklens.
No.
Representative Munson.
No.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
There being 9 ayes and 8 nays, the motion is adopted, and House File 239 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Next, we have up House File 1270. Representative Lee, would you care to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 1270 to be laid over.
Representative Lee moves that House File 1270 be laid over. Representative Lee, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 1270. Mr. Chair, would it be possible for us to take up the A1 amendment first?
Yes, Representative Lee. Thank you for the reminder. Representative Lee has an author's amendment, coded A1. Representative Lee moves the A1 to get the bill in the shape he would like. Any discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 say aye.
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 Any opposed? The A1 is adopted. Representative Lee, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for adopting the A1 amendments. This is just to allow for the RDA appropriation for my proposal. And so, Mr. Chair and committee, numerous state, federal, and local governmental entities are taking a position on climate change and 100% clean energy efforts. Minnesota's largest investor-owned utility, Xcel Energy, has also taken a 100% carbon-free initiative. And to meet these workforce demands in various sectors of the emerging economy, we must start to engage and equip community members who have traditionally not participated in the energy career pathways. In 2019, the Public Utilities Commission was tasked with overseeing the newly formed Energy Utility Diversity Group, which consisted of various governmental entities, utilities from urban, suburban, and rural communities, and community members. And their task was to examine the challenges and opportunities for Minnesota's energy utilities to attract a diverse workforce with the skills needed to advance a 21st century industry. And one of the findings was that the lack of diversity in the education pipeline for STEM educational programs was really highlighted. And their recommendation was for career exposure for students and young people, and educating young people on the energy industry, as well as providing tools and programs to gain the fundamental knowledge of the industry. And so my proposal would go towards helping create an accessible training space and programming for participants that live within the XL territory. It appropriates $2.5 million from the RDA account for a grant to Northgate Development to create a pilot project to provide training pathways into careers in the clean energy sector for students and young adults in underserved communities. The training must prioritize the inclusion of communities of color, indigenous people, and people with low incomes. And the training must be relevant to the design, construction, operation, or maintenance of systems producing renewable solar or wind energy, system resulting in improvement in energy efficiency, systems of energy storage for renewable energy systems, including battery technology, infrastructure for charging all electric or electric hybrid vehicles, or grid technologies that manage and load and provide services to the distribution grid that reduces uses or shift demand of off-peak periods. And so with me today, Mr. Chair, are some of the community partners I'm working with to bring this proposal forward. And I'd like it if you could just introduce them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Be happy to do so. Thank you, Representative Lee. First, we'll be hearing from Jemez Staples. Mr. Staples, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Long and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present before you. As many of you know, Minnesota has some of the worst racial disparities in the country, which include gaps in education, employment, income, homeownership, health, and more. My name is Jemez Staples. I'm the North Minneapolis President, CEO of Northgate Development and Renewable Energy Partners, a certified minority-owned solar development company. I actively participate in a host of committees and advisory groups to address carbon reduction and racial disparities in Minnesota. I committed myself to doing my part to tackle the greatest issues of our time, climate change and poverty, through the clean energy revolution. Since 2013, this has been a huge undertaking. Colleagues and I have exhausted ourselves continuously working overtime on this endeavor. We acknowledge it will take a lot of work and a collage of various industries and partners to resolve barriers to greater diversity of opportunities in these fields. However, progress was made. In 2019, when this body of the legislature took action, ordering the Minnesota Public Utility Commission to oversee a group made up of statewide utilities, investor-owned, munis, and co-ops, state agencies, local government, private sector partners, and community-based organizations in order to analyze the diversification of the energy utility industry. The collective group became the Energy Utility Diversity Group, referenced by Representative Lee. My company, Renewable Energy Partners, is a part of the EUDG group. This engaged and investigative process culminated with a report that was delivered to the legislature on January 15th, 2020. While there were a host of findings and recommendations, I will only identify those that are most pertinent to the bill at hand. Findings, though utilities have conducted outreach efforts, a lack of awareness about the industry, particularly within underrepresented communities, can pose a challenge to recruitment efforts. A number of employment barriers still limit the success of efforts to hire more diverse candidates. Shifts in technology are expected to create an increase in technician roles supporting changes to the grid, other technology and data-focused roles. Therefore, lack of diversity in education pipeline for STEM educational programs must also be considered. The drop in industry workforce training programs in the 1980s and the trend away from technical schools in the 1990s have contributed to a skills gap issue. This gap is particularly acute in diverse communities where additional training is needed to be built up in the talent pipeline. Here are the recommendations, some of the recommendations. Build pipelines. Career exposure should start during high school or earlier for students and young people, and employers should establish, maintain relationships with targeted schools and population and engage consistently and regularly with students over time. Expanded training. It is important to expand training opportunities for diverse populations, including registered apprenticeships, paid internships, paid fellowships, to help identify and nurture professional skills. Expanding or replicating community and school-based programs that support STEM learning, like the CEWD school curriculum or mentoring programs, such as Future Cities Competition, which pairs energy utility professionals with students to provide STEM tutoring and career pathway guidance. investment from the states. I'm sorry, the investment from the state. Solutions will likely not come from the energy sector alone. It is important for the state of Minnesota and school districts serving diverse populations to invest closing achievement and opportunity gaps and improving retention and graduation rates for racial and ethnic minority students and low-income under-resourced households and students from immigrant populations. Establishing energy experience centers located in accessible locations, including opportunity zones, which we are, in order to ensure access to expose youth and adults to energy technology educational opportunities and to create hubs where interested individuals, businesses can connect with utilities, vendors, and training providers. Currently, training for many of these careers are out of reach of urban communities as identified. By transit, 2 hours one way for a solar class at Century College, the same 2 hours for one-way trip to get to Dakota Technical College for a line worker course. The Minneapolis IBEW 292 training center is in St. Michael with no public transit. Energy efficiency training is 2 hours north by car at Fond du Lac Community College in Cloquet. If we plan to meet our goals for climate change, we must take the recommendations from the EUDG, which is a statewide focus, but also apply those to our local communities here and target our underserved communities specifically within the metropolitan area. The training center bill will support sites in North Minneapolis, which sits on the highest use transit line, which is scheduled for a $75 million bus rapid transit investment that will create access for all. Buses will stop on front of the building about every 10 minutes, running from Brooklyn Center to Bloomington and connecting to the light rail and the green line and the blue line every 3 minutes at the Twin Stadium. Neither Northgate Development or Renewable Energy Partners seek to run any of these training programs. Our goal is to use the property in North Minneapolis for what we believe is the highest and best use. The training center as a training center for skills and career exploration in fast-growing emerging energy technologies. You will hear from some of our partners who are actually providing this training. Since the acquisition of the property in 2017, we've made significant movements to actually make the building itself a STEM learning laboratory. We've deployed 166 kilowatts of solar on the roof. We have battery storage technology that will be getting connected within the next 30 to 60 days. We have a heat pump system that we will be deploying to put the gas utility on standby. We'll be putting electric vehicle charging stations on the parking lot. We're managing 100% of the stormwater on site with some improvements that we've recently made. In addition to other infrastructure improvements, which will ultimately be one of the first of its kind that will be a virtual power plant utilizing the battery storage and the control systems. Our partners have always been willing to work with the building trades on pathways to high quality training and offer to be a part of this project, and that offer to be a part of this project still stands. RDA funding is supporting programs in Xcel Energy territory, and workforce investments of RDA funds will be ensure we have a skilled and craft workforce we need to meet the state's renewable energy and energy efficiency goals. My own experience as a member of the Minneapolis Energy Vision Advisory Committee and the work we have done on workforce needs and assessments shows the critical importance of accessible training and pathways to green to clean energy careers. And with that, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and I ask for your support for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Staples. Next, we will hear from Mr. Antonio Cardonia. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you all today. My name is Antonio Cardona, Vice President of Career Readiness and Project for Pride and Living. At PPL, we provide community members with the skills necessary to get and keep a job with proven income growth and job placements. We are happy to be here today to lend our support for this bill, which will lay out a critical foundation to advance youth preparation for participation in clean energy jobs of the future. Through our LEAP initiative, Project for Pride and Living, and other key partners work to increase employment and educational opportunities for young people facing some of the greatest challenges on the path to adulthood. By focusing on youth who are homeless or highly mobile in the juvenile justice systems or foster care, LEAP integrates several programs to more effectively help young people earn a secondary credential. As we look ahead to an increasingly uncertain future, it will be necessary to design and resource initiatives that can tackle multiple challenges at once. We see this as one of those initiatives. A few points I would like to share. One in four young people aged 16 to 24 are expected to be disconnected from school and or work during the pandemic. Moving forward on such a career center specifically for those young people who are at risk of disengaging or have disengaged is a form of pandemic planning. DEED's forward thinking of enabling Pathways to Prosperity funding to duly enroll in career training and high school credit is the sort of careful pairings that will better prepare the workforce. Centralizing this opportunity in one space is truly the way we can prepare the future workforce. Concerns of environmental justice and clean energy production often overlay communities with lower incomes. Establishing a clean energy training center in a community most effective increases the ability of residents to not only improve their environment, but also build a foundation for living wage jobs. Thank you for your time. My colleague, Christy Snyder, LEAP director, is also here to answer any questions specifically related to us after the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next, we will be hearing from Jim Verhoey. Mr. Verhoey, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of this bill, House File 1270. My name is Jim Verhoey. I am the director of the Avivo Institute of Career and Technical Education, which is a division of Avivo, a 60-year-old Minneapolis-based nonprofit whose mission is to increase well-being through recovery and career advancement while working to end homelessness. At the Avivo Institute of Career and Technical Education, we've been engaged in workforce development for more than 30 years as we support people in living well and working well. We serve community members of color, folks with low incomes, those who lack skills necessary to embark on a meaningful career pathway, and those with other barriers to self-sufficiency. For years, we've supported thousands of Minnesotans in their pursuit of industry-recognized credentials, a living wage job, and movement off of public assistance. In July 2009, just to give you a little history, we embarked on a project providing home energy auditor training for community members who were lacking in certain skills and looking for credentialed training in support of launching their careers. It was a four-year project. It lasted through 2013. Some of our partners were Dunwoody College, as well as several government agencies. Now we are prepared to partner and collaborate once again on another workforce development initiative, this time again focused on clean energy jobs and diversifying them. At Avivo, we are uniquely positioned to join this project and offer skills training and support services. We have collaborated for years with other community-based organizations such as PPL, colleges, business partners, and lots of other relevant stakeholders on career pathway training. So whether it's a career in solar, wind, energy storage, or a related clean energy area, we are ready to help folks get started on their career pathway, transition to a post-secondary degree program if that's their plan, and ultimately ensure the successful implementation of this exciting pilot project as we work to support folks in achieving living wage jobs in the clean energy sector. Thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of Avivo in support of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you very much. And finally, we are hearing from Cynthia Gomez. Welcome to the committee. Is Ms. Gomez available? Oh, I think you need to unmute.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Cynthia Gomez. I am a teacher at PYC Arts and Tech High School in North Minneapolis. We've been a partner of JAMAZ in this exciting project from the beginning. I've been a teacher for 30 years, and I am so privileged to be a career specialist. And, if education is going to meet the 21st century challenge in North Minneapolis, we have to address the racial wealth gap and the racial opportunity gap, and we have to retool our high schools for these so-called opportunity youth in the direction of what is going to happen for them after high school. I think that what we're building in North Minneapolis is something that will be replicable nationwide. But what I really want to talk to you about actually is one student. And she actually availed herself of a training, Mr. Cardona at PPL. And she graduated from high school. Michaela graduated from high school and took a very short pharmacy tech training program. She and her boyfriend Her boyfriend, Lloyd, was in kidney failure. They were fighting homelessness. Michaela was his PCA and literally saved his life. And after he received his new kidney, they enrolled in this pharmacy tech program, which absolutely changed their trajectory of life. They understood what it was to be a respected team member in a team environment. They were earning enough money to start saving and financially stabilize themselves. And what I see from where I'm sitting is the immense power of career training, and the way that especially for marginalized communities that the priority should be focused career tech training that graduates students into opportunities. Michaela now is working with the Carl O. Benson Foundation, has received a $20,000 fellowship for 6 months to become a very highly skilled facilitator and to facilitate and lead conversations in the Twin Cities about community safety. And this all started from a lowly pharmacy tech program. So how much more powerful that Jamez and company are bringing 21st century green energy opportunities into this community. So that's where I'm coming from. And I hope you remember Michaela when you vote on this bill today. Thank you. Or whenever you vote on it.
Thank you so much. We have two individuals who've signed up for public testimony. And first, we will hear from Kyle Samajima with Minneapolis Climate Action. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Long and members of the committee. Thanks for letting me speak today. My name is Kyle Samajima, and I am the Executive Director of Minneapolis Climate Action, a nonprofit focused on community-driven climate solutions centered in environmental racial justice, with a deep focus on true community solar gardens with projects in progress at Emerge Second Chance Recycling Facility and North High School in Minneapolis. I'm here to speak in support of this bill. I first want to thank Renewable Energy Partners and their partners here today and other supporters for their innovative work in addressing equity in the renewable energy field. In this moment of a climate crisis, a declared climate emergency in Minneapolis, and a nationwide reckoning with systemic and persistent racism, our leaders need to make decisions that are bold and support the kind of work renewable energy partners and supporters are doing. To prevent warming beyond 1.5 degrees centigrade, we need to reduce emissions by 7.6% every year from now to 2030. 10 years ago, if countries had acted on this science, governments would have needed to reduce emissions by 3.3 each year. Every year we fail to act, the level of difficulty and cost to reduce emissions goes up. Now is the time for Minnesota to act. Minnesota has some of the most glaring, tragic, and unacceptable disparities for minority communities in income, health, and just about every other measure of well-being. This is especially true and egregious in Minneapolis. Funding for this training center shows that Minnesota politicians understand the need for good-paying local jobs in the renewable energy and energy efficiency fields, and the urgent need to address climate and racial equity issues, and especially understand the need to create opportunities for underserved youth who can't get to a training center outside of the city, who can stay in their community and watch a new green economy unfold in their community in front of their eyes, in their homes, and be a part of it through this training center. Minneapolis Climate Action is working hard to democratize our renewable energy transition by putting benefits and energy ownership in the hands of the community. We want to see true community solar gardens on every available roof in the Twin Cities to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, provide equitable renewable energy access, and create a thriving green economy. To open more truly community-based community solar gardens, we need engineers, installers, and to get more energy efficiency audits for homeowners, especially for those that pay a higher percentage of their income on utility bills. We need people trained in these skills, and we need workers who represent their communities to show that the renewable energy opportunities belong to everyone, not just to those who have benefited in the past. There is a clear shortage of workforce members trained in renewable energy fields, especially BIPOC community members, And this bill to support this training center will be a critical way to address this shortage in a way that also addresses the lack of diversity in the field. I hope that you support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And our final public testifier is Lee Samuelson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long, members of the committee. I frequently tune into the Energy Committee meetings, and I'm happy to speak in support of House File 1270. For the past 5 years, I've been a strong advocate for this Green Job Training Center in North Minneapolis and that can provide a career pathway for underserved youth right in their own backyard. Between 2016 and the start of the pandemic, I went to community events and collected at least 1,682 signatures on a petition asking Minnesota energy leaders to promote clean energy and energy efficiency workforce training programs that bring in low-income communities and communities of color. I once got into the Renew Career Training Program funded by federal stimulus dollars, but to take the opportunities I was most looking for, I would have had to travel all the way to White Bear Lake or St. Michael. And that was not suitable for me as someone without their own individual vehicle or for many in areas of concentrated poverty. And with that in mind, I was inspired to take the initiative to get the 100 plus signatures needed to bring the equitable workforce training resolution to the floor of the 2017 Minneapolis DFL convention. And it stated support for, quote, the development in Minneapolis of additional job training and workforce development programs in renewable energy, energy efficiency, and energy-related fields that serve low-income and minority populations, including specifically a multipurpose training facility in North Minneapolis. And I remember the resolution getting endorsed on a unanimous voice vote in a space that included the leadership of the building trades and other key stakeholders. And it doesn't matter who gets the credit for it. The main point is that our city has an opportunity to address equity, clean, green jobs, and our climate crisis with this game-changing training center. And I second everything that Kyle had stated. Thank you for the time.
Thank you so much. Next, we'll turn to member questions, and we'll begin with Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is going to be at a single facility. So, you know, obviously we've got our people around the state do have, you know, training programs that are like this. Is the higher ed committee or higher ed community going to actually be part of this, or is this going to be more of a union driven endeavor?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Swazinski. I have not heard from the chair of the Higher Ed Committee to see if they want to hear this. And so that's why the motion that I have brought before is to have it discussed here in the Energy Committee, because we are looking at appropriation from the RDA funds. And, you know, this is really about, you know, providing our current youth right now, you know, the opportunity to really gain the experience so that they could, you know, really move forward towards, you know, having the knowledge that's needed for a new and emerging industry here in the state of Minnesota. And so that, you know, a lot of our students, the students of color that we are identifying here, have an opportunity to participate in that economy.
Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, I mean, I have a wind energy, you know, just up the road from in my district, and it, you know, it's 20 years old. Have you approached just asking, you know, it seems like this is a commute issue. That's one of your bigger concern is that people can't access these programs. Have you actually reached out, Representative Lee, to, you know, Minnesota West or any of the other higher education? I mean, if there are students out there looking for training, whether they could use PSEO credits or whatnot to actually develop a program through our existing system rather than create something brand new?
Representative Lee, and then we're going to have to go to Representative Franzen. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair Long. Thank you for the question. I have not engaged with, you know, those entities that you had provided and mentioned. I'm glad that you have this in your community, that your community can participate in this. And this is what I'm asking for our local community here in North Minneapolis and throughout the metropolitan region. It is on the bus line, like Mr. Staples said, and it's really great that we have these transportation options for them, transit option. And I'm glad that Chair Hornstein, the chair of transportation, is on here too. If we want to have a larger conversation around access to transportation, I'm sure that the chair will like to hear that in his committee. And so that's why we're bringing this forward, to make sure that the residents in North Minneapolis and throughout the region have an opportunity to really utilize this resource as you have in your district.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers, I guess, perhaps to the testifier named Kylie, and I can't pronounce her last name, so I won't try. There's a lot of talk about racial equity, and we focus a lot about that here in Minnesota and across the nation, racial equity. But what about the racial equity in countries that utilize slave labor to make green energy products, such as the Uyghurs in China? A simple Google search will give you articles tied to that read, such as Chinese solar companies tied to use of forced labor. That's the New York Times.
If this is a question to the bill, then it's appropriate.
Mr. Chair. This is a supply issue that relies on dehumanizing people in order to promote green energy on the backs of those who have no choice. The Uyghurs in China are in re-education camps so that they can make us solar panels. I think that's very disingenuous to talk about racial equity here on this topic when we are using people against their own will to bring those products here to the U.S., Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Franzen, for the comment. Representative Lee, closing remarks to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for this opportunity to discuss this proposal. I really appreciate the time and the discussion, and I hope that members can support this so that we can support our local young people and students here, and not just Minneapolis, but throughout the metropolitan region. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lee renews his motion, and House File 1270, as amended, is laid over. Our final bill for today is Representative Lisligard's bill, House File 1978. Representative Lisligard, would you care to move your bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lisligard moves that House File 1978 be laid over. Representative Lisligard, I believe you have an author's amendment. Would you care to move that?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lisligard moves the A2 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape he would like. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 say aye.
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 Any opposed? The A2 is adopted. Please tell us about your bill, Representative Lisligard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for hearing House File 1978, a bill that will dramatically expand the manufacturing of solar module in Minnesota. I'm very proud to say that Minnesota's only solar manufacturer plant is located in my district in the city of Mountain Iron. Mountain Iron created a renewable energy park several years ago, and now nearly 100 people work at Helene USA, a solar manufacturer making high technology, state-of-the-art, made in the USA solar panels from Minnesota and America. These panels are a tier one rated by Bloomberg and are used by the US Defense Department. This bill, as amended, would provide $5.5 million to the city of Mountain Iron to expand the city-owned factory which Helene is located. The city owns the building and is leased to Helene, and the lease rates are used to pay off the debt of the building. Helene started operation in 2017, expanded the production of the previous solar manufacturer from 2 megawatts per year to 140 megawatts per year. The plant will be expanded from 330,000 square feet to 95,000 square feet. Even though the warehouse inventory and production and hold a brand new state-of-the-art production line, production will be more than tripled to 450 megawatts per year. One module every 27 seconds. Let me repeat that. One module every 27 seconds. And that would be the second largest solar manufacturer in the United States. There will be about 45 new jobs. And I want to tell you that most of the employees are second chance workers, people who need jobs in our economy. And I'm proud that Helene is offering them an employment. This bill and its intention to expand the solar production in Minnesota to create jobs and to clean up our environment while diversifying the economy is exactly what we should be in the result of expenditures from the RDA. I am proud to note a great share of this plant's production ends up in the Xcel service territory, providing solar energy options for all Minnesota. Well, I have two testifiers here, the CEO of Helene and also the city administrator for the city of Mountain Iron, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Martin Pakhturuk is our first testifier. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everybody. So I will start by addressing Representative Franson's timely comment by saying that companies like us make possible the manufacture and use of solar modules in the United States. Basically, 25% only of the supply and demand of solar modules is made in the US. The growth of our company will increase that share. Therefore, will increase the ability of US companies to use a US-made product. In the last 3.5 years, we have been paying $2.5 million worth of wages, and with this increase, we'll move that number to $4 million. So that's a direct contribution of the company to the community, besides the indirect contribution in contractors and other expenses. We have been in business for 11 years. Manufacturing from Canada, and we're entering our fifth year into the U.S. by this increase of 300% of the manufacturing capacity. The building originally planned was a warehouse. We have been working with all of you for around a year and a half. In this interim, we have increased our aim to produce in Minnesota. That's why we went from just a warehouse to a manufacturing facility with a warehouse. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And if you wouldn't mind just stating your name and title for the record.
So it's Martin Pakhturuk. I'm the CEO of Helian, based out of Mountain Iron, Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Representative Lissagard, would you like to introduce your next testifier?
Our next testifier is Craig Wainio from Mountain Iron.
Mr. Wainio, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for hearing this today. My name is Craig Wainio. I'm the city administrator of the city of Mountain Iron and executive director of the Mountain Iron EDA, the owner of the facility currently leased to Helene. In the early 2010s, Mountain Iron worked hard to identify possible ways to diversify the economy of the area. One strategy was to pursue the green energy sector and develop those types of projects and investments. Early on, Mountain Iron became one of the first outstate communities to become a green step city, and we are committed to a more sustainable community. Mountain Iron has put its money where its mouth is and has invested in solar, currently working with our We are currently working with our IOU to develop a solar farm of 4 to 6 megawatts in our community. Based upon the initiative, the community developed a renewable and sustainable energy park to attract a more diverse economy. The community previously attracted a solar manufacturer, and for various reasons, that endeavor was not successful. We were very lucky to find another tenant, Helene, to commit and invest in the area and the facility to develop a strong, vibrant business. This shows Mountain Iron's ability to deliver and undertake these types of projects and deliver results. On the Iron Range, we have been criticized, sometimes justifiably, that we need to diversify our economy. Helene provides just that diversity in our area and contribute to the statewide economy. Mountain Iron would not only be home to the largest taconite mine in the world. It would also be home to the second largest solar factory in the country. With your assistance, Helene can expand to fulfill demand, create jobs, and bring outside investment into the state. We feel this investment is absolutely necessary to keep a growing and successful enterprise in our state and to diversify our economy. Mountain Iron respectfully requests your support for this expansion. Thank you.
Thank you. We have one individual signed up for public testimony, and that is Peter Teglin with Mencia. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long and members of the committee. My name is Peter Teglund, and I represent the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association, or Mencia, a 501c6 nonprofit trade organization that represents our state's solar and energy storage businesses. Together, our members include over 120 solar companies and related businesses, which employ over 4,200 Minnesotans. On behalf of those businesses, we support House File 1978 and its inclusion in this year's Energy Omnibus Bill. The proposal in this bill to fund the expansion of Mountain Iron's Renewable Energy Industrial Park will add manufacturing jobs to greater Minnesota communities and help create solar modules for use across Minnesota and North America. Helene, who you've heard from today and who leases the facility, manufactures the highest quality solar modules available, Tier 1, and represents the best of Minnesota manufacturing. Those modules are used in projects across the state and beyond. Helene is the only solar module manufacturer in the Midwest, and its geographic proximity to expanding solar development has brought home those benefits to the Iron Range. Much of the solar development in Minnesota has been and will likely continue to take place in the service territory of the state's largest electric utility, Xcel Energy, whose ratepayers fund the RDA. The use of the RDA funds to expand the city-owned facility will therefore return dividends to Xcel customers by way of the Iron Range, ensuring that these dollars recirculate through the economy of Minnesota. This bill should be something that members of both the House and the Senate and all parties can get behind as an approach to energy deployment that works for all Minnesotans. I'd like to thank Representative Listlegard for bringing this bill forward, to thank the committee for your time, and to thank you all for your support for this important bill.
Thank you. Next, we'll turn to member questions, and we'll begin with Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. It was said in the testimony that the money that the city of Mountain Iron put into the project, then the company itself pays back the loan. Is there a debt repayment with this expenditure? I think is it $5.5 million? Is that what the amendment did? And then how will that work, and what other monies are being put into this expansion?
Yeah, I can rapidly respond. So the estimation, it's Martin Pachterek speaking. Thank you for your question. The estimated cost for the building is $11 million. $11 million that the city will spend. That's why 50% is considered today, and the other 50% will be a loan from the IRRRB. Helian will then invest $8 million in a new manufacturing line and $15 million allocation of working capital. Does that respond to your question, sir?
Representative Swazinski.
Yes. So your rent will increase because of the expanded square footage.
It will be a new lease on the new building, correct?
Hold on one second, Mr. Postruck. Let Representative Swazinski finish. Go ahead, Representative Swazinski.
Yeah, so you'll repay the IRRRB, their portion, but is that how that works through the city?
Mr. Puffer.
That is correct. So there will be a new lease in the new building to pay the city to allow the repayment of the loan correctly.
Representative Swazinski. Okay.
And then the percentage of so the RDA comes in, it will be approximately be half of the project with the $5.5 million. Will they charge rent on the portion that is a grant through the state? What's the city's plan with that, or will they not charge rent on the state's portion because they're not using it as debt repayment?
Sounds like that's a question for Mr. Wainey.
Representative Chairman, I believe the plan is to restructure the lease for the IRRRB payment, and this grant would be just to support the development without any repayment.
Representative Swazinski, did you have one last question?
No, so is that so it's a grant or is it a loan that you're receiving from IRRRB?
Mr. Wainio.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the IRRRB funding is a, what do they call it? It's a loan, but it's a non-recourse loan.
What does that mean?
Mr. Wainio.
Chairman, Representative, that means that if for some reason we as a city were not receiving payment from the tenant, we are not required to repay to the IRRRB. The only time we're required to pay to the IRRRB is when we actually collect a lease payment from the tenant.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to pay their stuff. But that was my question and my thought process on this is that if we're going to come to the RDA, which is ratepayer money, to build this facility and have higher retail rates because of it, does it make sense for us, for the city of Mount Arden, then to charge on the square footage that is built because of that grant when it's not going to get repaid to anything but a loan to the IRRRB? You know what I mean? I mean, we should just say, well, you can collect rent on the addition of money that you actually got invested in it rather than, you know, so that if we're trying to actually improve this and grow this, then it should be just viewed as a grant and you shouldn't charge rent on those extra square footage that is being built through that. Because it's not really a recourse, it's actually going to be a revenue source for you. That's all.
Thank you, Representative Spasinski. No further questions, and we're out of time. Representative Listlegard, any closing comments?
It's just it's a wonderful project, and I hope that everyone can support it, help diversify the Iron Range, and if we're going to have green technology, made right, made in Minnesota, and let's move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Listlegard. And I'll just mention that I had the privilege of having you host me up at the facility to take a tour, and it really is an impressive facility and a great asset to the state. Representative Listlegard renews his motion, and House File 1978, as amended, is laid over. Representative Spasinski, we're over time, but if it's very brief. Representative Spasinski.
Sorry about that. Just want to get a roadmap for the next 2 weeks. When we'll see a omnibus bill, what your plan is with that. I think, what are we, 2 weeks away from our deadlines and what that's going to look like over the next few days. Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Representative Spasinski. We are still working with leadership on the roadmap for when the various omnibus bills need to be prepared by, and so we should know that very soon, but I don't have an update for you on that today. We do have some additional RDA bills that we will be hearing next week, and I believe that we're going to have to be moving some hearings around next week based on floor action, but we will get those notices.
Any idea what's the rough, obviously you've had some conversations, any rough idea of where we're going to be at as far as budget targets for our committee?
I'm as interested to hear as you are, Representative Spasinski.
All right.
Thank you, members, for a great hearing today, and with that, we are adjourned.